Welcome to Too Much Future, the show where we talk about Fallout. I'm Michael Lutz. What?
You're Michael?
Yeah, I'm Michael, and this time.
Oh, okay. Whew! Phew! As I comically wipe my brow. Oh, gosh. I'm Cameron. And we're talking about, we're at the hub now, Michael.
Yeah, we're at the hub, the big city.
Yeah, in Junktown, we went to Junktown, and they said, hey, you know, you're in Junktown, but you know where the real action is. You know, Killian Darkwater lowers his brow and whispers into the corner, you know, did you know that there's a hub you can go to? And, well, golly gosh, we went here. I actually don't know, other than people mentioning that the hub exists, I don't really know why we're coming here, other than, like, as you said last time, it was just a place we know about. And so we need to go there.
Yeah, no, that is kind of, like, where we are in terms of this game, and it's kind of how it's designed. So I don't know how the timer, I think this is on a timer, but did you get a cutscene when you entered the hub?
No.
Okay, well, I did. And part of this is because I think Eleanor, as opposed to Tonk, has been wasting a lot of time going to places where she can't do anything because she doesn't know what is happening. Ironically, for the character with all the dialogue options. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I entered the hub and I got a cutscene. A very brief cutscene that showed me some little shots of things that I guess are going on back in Vault 13. And there was some voiceover, and it was like, hey, the water's running out.
Just a reminder?
Yeah, just a reminder. I think you get 150 days, if I'm remembering correctly. The timer is 150 days for getting the water chip. And I think this is a cutscene you get at day 100, maybe?
Hmm.
So, yeah, I guess I entered the hub on my 100th day or thereabouts, and the game reminded me that everyone that I knew, I guess, was going to die if I didn't actually figure out something to do about it.
Yeah, I think I have, like, 125 days left.
Oh, okay.
Well, that's the thing. That's the curse of having too many dialogue options, is that Tonk only has one option, and it's smash it with a hammer. And when that's the case, you know, smashing it, and basically, you know, you're taking that path, smash it with a hammer, don't smash it with a hammer. And then down that flow chart, smash it with a hammer is win the fight, die. You know, that's not like there's a lot of variability there. So I think probably Eleanor has had a lot more ability to, like, maneuver down the flow chart, whereas I think I've spent the same amount of time playing as you have. And this is the police coming to get me, of course. Mm-hmm. But I've spent the same amount of time playing as you have, but I've had to reload probably 15 times more than you have. Because I die pretty often.
Yeah, no, I think that's probably fair. This is actually maybe... The hub is maybe the first time I have gone to a settlement in this game. And I died. But this is probably the first time that I have gone to a settlement and not had a whole bunch of people aggro me for reasons I didn't understand. Like, somehow I managed to get through the hub without getting everyone angry, so that was cool. What was the first thing you saw in the hub, Cameron?
First thing I saw in the hub are a bunch of caravans running around, like, all these people. This is more people than exist in the entirety of the rest of the world.
Yes.
Of Fallout 1 in, yes, the first screen of the hub. And it's like four caravans, and it's basically like the either the bed of a truck or an El Camino. Who could know? but kind of that turned into a wagon, and they're like loaded over in supplies, and there's like four or five of them here, and then there's like, I don't know, like 20 people on this screen, and they're all running around, and I thought, oh, awesome, this is a bunch of traders, I can trade with them, and that was not the case. So I spent a lot of time running around the screen looking to see if I could trade with any of these people, and no dice.
Nope, they just kind of talk to you and at you.
Yeah, the hub, I guess, is the trade hub,
mm-hmm,
is kind of what it means.
Yeah, and I'm not sure, like, geographically, even fantastically, like, where it's supposed to correspond to in the quote-unquote real world. But it's...
I actually looked this up before. Mm-hmm. Hold on, let me look it up again now. Because I think it's meant to be Barstow, like in the fiction, but on the map, it isn't Barstow, which is a little bit weird. Yeah. Let me look. Yeah, behind the scenes, although the Fallout official survival guide gives the name of the old city the hub was founded upon as Barstow, its actual location corresponds more closely with the present-day Edwards Air Force Base, whereas Necropolis, which we'll talk about next episode, lies where Barstow would be. So there you go. So I guess the survival guide is the official strategy guide that came out with the game.
Oh, okay. Well,
so it's wrong. It's officially incorrect.
Not to get too far ahead of this, but the reason I ask is because I'm going to go out on a limb. I'm going to say that Tonk did not get this. I got a neat little bit of like world building slash flavor text in the form of a holodisc in the hub downtown, and it gave me a list of vaults. It lists vaults 12, 13, and 15. Who knows what happened to vault 14? But it mentioned that I'm trying to think. What is it? I think it's vault 15 is like Bakersfield or something like that.
Interesting.
It's vault 12 that's Bakersfield. So at any rate, it was one of the first times I think that the game has really kind of pointed to the world as it was before the war. Actually, a lot of things happen in the hub, I think, that have not happened in this game before. And so one of them is this kind of direct reference to like that this was a version of America with real place names that we would remember.
Yeah, the hub is basically a different video game. Yeah. You know, I think the last time you said something to the effect of like Junktown being the place for you where this game, like all these different threads have kind of come together. And I think like I 100% agreed with that. And now I really agree with that this game has gone from being like Shady Sands is barely a video game.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't say that to like police the boundaries of video games, but just like the number of verbs that you have, the number of different conversations you can have, the number of things you can do, period, is very limited and it's kind of obscure. Like
it feels like a proof of concept.
Yeah, 100%, right? Yeah, it feels like the vertical slice of like what it could be. Yes, there is a conversation with a talking head. Yes, there is a environmental puzzle to do. Yes, there is a science skill check. 100%, it does feel that way. But now at the time that we're in the hub, yeah, there's all kinds of like new stuff going on. There's factions, and I know they already had like two factions, but like there are three different companies you can choose to work for. There's mm-hmm. a big main quest and a bunch of side quests, and then there's this kind of real world building stuff. I feel like on one hand it would have been overwhelming, kind of probably, for the game to have opened up here, but on the other hand, I could see where it would be very easy to fall off of Fallout before this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it is, like, last episode, I think what I said is that, like, it had become a Fallout game, and now it's mm-hmm. very much a Fallout game. Also, I should say how I got that holodisc, if only because it's amusing. There is a library in the hub. Did you go to the library?
What do you think? Do you think Tonk's making time for the library?
He might have walked in. Who knows? He might have checked things out.
Well, I mean, he definitely cannot read, so he might have... is this the weapons repository? No. Okay.
So, here's a funny thing. Mm-hmm. The librarian, whose name is Mrs. Stapleton, is a merchant, and you can buy ammo from her.
Well, you know what? Every good library is meant to make space for itself within the community, and the community of the hub needs ammo.
Yeah. So anyway, she said, like, Mrs. Stapleton was talking to Eleanor and was like, oh, here's this, thing that I have for, like, she'll sell you this holodisc, which is not how libraries work. So naturally what I did was threaten to burn down the library, and she just handed it over. So that's how I got that holodisc, and that's how I learned about where all the vaults were. So
yeah, there's a lot more robust and deep conversation at this point too. Like I feel like I had several different NPCs that I talked to where I had more than one thing to say to them, and that could be just because Tonk has not had the ability to say very many things in the past, but it felt like there was a lot more robust thinking about where conversations can go in mm-hmm. the hub.
Yeah,
But no, absolutely. I did not get that. I did not get that holo disc.
Well, that's why we're playing in two different styles, so we can see the whole bounty.
100%. But yeah, so I saw those traitors as I came in, and then after that, I saw roughly 10,000 cops.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. I like, so here is an observation about the hub. Mm-hmm. There are more NPCs in this area than I think there are in like any other settlement in the game. And the vast majority of the NPCs are absolutely cops.
Yes. Yeah, the entirety, and very few of them have dialogue, and they all have super cool weapons and armor on. This is an army. Like, this is an army of police officers who could do anything they wanted to. Like, there's raiders out there. Oh, there's a death claw, whatever. We'll talk about that in a minute. Mm-hmm. But just why don't you send one of your 400, what are they called? Guards. Why don't you send one of your 400 guards out to deal with that?
Yeah, no, I thought it was extremely interesting that that there were all these cops, and like that was just like, and when I say there are all these cops, I don't just mean like you know, every screen I go to, oh look, there's a cop. I mean like there are 3 to 4 cops just kind of like standing in the streets, just hanging out in every screen. And I don't know to what degree I am supposed to take this as a kind of commentary on the dystopian nature of this post-apocalyptic lifestyle, and to what degree that's just kind of there because that's what you have in the post-apocalypse, because everyone's going to be at each other's throats, and so we need, you know, 4 to 5 cops in every street.
Yeah, we need to, basically for everyone who can be angry in this world, we need 2 police officers.
Right.
And that's the kind of, like, training trade-off that you make. Yeah, I don't know. So when I was seeing it, or when I was playing through it, I thought, okay, well, maybe it's to prevent me from killing everyone on one screen and, like, getting an ungodly amount of weapons and ammo or whatever. But also, if you do it on one screen, then it's gonna make everyone else aggro, too. So, you know, it doesn't have that benefit either. I really don't know. I feel like there was meant to be a little bit more of, like, a Big Brother-y kind of feel to it, where maybe the you know, the people in charge are not so great, but that is not the narrative of the hub at all.
Right. So, yeah, like, the first person I talked to aside from the caravans, which, by the way, I think the caravanners mentioned that caravans are disappearing, right? That's a thing that gets mentioned there. Yeah, because they tell you to go talk to some of the trading companies in order to figure out what you might be able to do about that if you're interested.
Oh, I just want to say, and that's kind of like the main quest, I would say, for the hub, is like, what's going on with the trade routes?
Right, because the other thing about the hub, as you said, it's the trading hub, and I'm trying to remember who it was that explained this to me. I mean, I don't mean a person, I mean like an NPC in the game, but I can't remember which one specifically. Someone explains that the hub is essentially a merchant republic, that there's like a council that rules it. There are 6 people, and because there are 3 main merchant companies that run this city, and the police, I guess, are answerable to the council, and the council has 6 members, 2 from each trading company. Again, there's a lot of specific world building here that we really haven't seen up until now.
Yes. I think that's this, because you have the character Deputy Fry written down, and he's like one of the deputies that's just standing in the middle of the street, and I'm pretty sure he's the one who explains like all of this world building stuff to you.
Okay, yeah, no, I think that is the case. And because I thought it was really funny when I talked to him, because I had talked to one of the sort of like random non-person guards before, and their dialogue was just like, the Maltese Falcon is a great place to settle or like to get a drink after work or something like that. And then I took a few steps forward and talked to his boss. And one of the first things he says to me is, we got to do something about this Maltese Falcon place.
He's like, do not go there. Yes. It's bad. It's a bad place to go. And we had different experiences of the hub for reasons around the Maltese Falcon that based on these notes that you've provided.
Oh, fascinating. He tells you to stay away from the Maltese Falcon. He mentions that it's run by a guy named Deckard, who we will talk about more. And then he just kind of sends you on your way. So I continued on, and I entered a kind of downtown area, and I found the sheriff's office. I think he had, the Deputy Fry had mentioned the sheriff's office, and that I could, like, report things there. Mm-hmm. And so I go into the sheriff's office, and I can just report a crime?
Yeah, he has two, which is so funny, right? Coming out of Junktown, where it's like, oh, it's the sheriff? Get ready for his treatise on justice in the apocalypse, right? Like, like he's this major, huge character. And so, you know, I got into my mind, because, you know, we have Aradesh, leader and kind of, like, him and Seth being like the letter of the law and the arm of the law, right? And then you get to Junktown, and it's like, oh, there's a sheriff. He's an important dude. He's the leader of the town. He's going to try to be mayor. And so I was like, okay, yeah, the sheriff, that's going to be someone to go to. That's how we've structured all these other towns. And yeah, you talk to him, and he's like literally a one-note NPC. You can be like, mm-hmm. I will talk to you later, or I have a crime to report.
And if you choose, I have a crime to report, and certain things haven't happened, your only response is like, oh, never mind.
Yeah, you're like, oh, I have a crime to report. Oh, wait, I don't, oh, shit, I don't have a crime to report. Oh, no! Yes, I thought that was very funny. I did that, and I never had a crime to report. So me and the sheriff are on 100% same position we were before.
Yeah, so I guess... What did you do? What was your next stop after learning about, like, the Maltese Falcon and everything? Well,
so looking at your notes here, you have also written down that you saw Iguana Bob. And if people remember Iguana Bob from previous episodes, Iguana Bob is the person who makes iguana bits, which are, like, an item you can pick up. And we know from our encounter with Doc Morbid in Junktown that Iguana Bob is making iguana bits out of human bits mm-hmm. that he is sourcing from... they sourced him from Doc Morbid. So here's the thing. I, you know, fought Doc Morbid. I killed Doc Morbid. I thought, hey, I can talk to Iguana Bob and say something about that. And I can just, I can only talk to Iguana Bob and be like, hey, can I buy some iguana bits? I Tonk does not get any additional options with talking to Iguana Bob. So Tonk, I guess, like, in character, cannot put together this big conspiracy that is happening in Junktown and then realize that this is the same Iguana Bob. This could be any man named Iguana Bob. You know, who could know? He just happens to be a food seller. So I did not get any additional fun stuff that I thought would be happening here.
Oh, okay. So what Eleanor could do was, well, she could also just buy some iguana bits. And you can also, when you talk to him, kind of, you know, say things in such a way that suggests that, like, you know more about the provenance of this meat than you're saying at the moment, and kind of get Iguana Bob suspicious. Or you could just start screaming, Iguana bits are people, Iguana bits are people, like in all caps in the middle of this downtown thing. If you do either of those, he'll tell you to settle down, basically. And then he will, well, then you will have basically the option to extort him, to blackmail him by saying, like, I guess, so this is a weird thing that happened. I thought, okay, now I can go report a crime, because Eleanor is basically good. She's not going to blackmail people. Mm-hmm. So I said, no, I'm not going to blackmail you. And I went to the sheriff to report the crime, which is that this guy is selling human meat, like, literally... outside, like within your eye line from the front door of the police department, there is a man selling human meat. Mm-hmm. So I walk back to the police off the police, and I try to report a crime. No, that's not a crime. Really? I guess that
well,
doesn't.
Well, is there some sort of interstate commerce clause that
maybe.
You're you know inter settlement commerce clause that he's in violation of? We don't know what the law is in Junktown. When it comes to dead bodies, so, you know, what can you do? His hands are tied.
Yeah. So, yeah, that like, nothing really happened there, and I didn't want to blackmail Iguana Bob, because, again, I'm kind of playing someone who is basically good. And, oh, yeah, so just my choice was to let Iguana Bob continue to do what he's doing or to blackmail him, and I decided not to blackmail him, so he just continued to do what he was doing, and that was it. That's the end of the saga of Iguana Bob.
So Eleanor just knows in her heart and in her brain, she knows that Iguanabob is chopping dudes up and selling them as meat and nothing. Stone nothing.
Yep. I mean, like, I suppose I could try killing him, but I imagine that would make everyone around him very angry. Maybe I should try killing him. I think to myself, like, looking up to the corner. Because, and we'll talk about this later, I had a very actually fruitful experience with experimentally killing someone in this area. So we'll talk about that later.
Experimental killing.
Yes. That was Iguanabob. And then I think this is also the same screen where you can find Fargo Traders. Is that right?
I believe so. And there's a couple weapon purchasing places too. Mm. Basically, anyone that you talk to, like all these people that we've talked to or talked about talking to, all of them, you have the ability to say, "Hey, is there somewhere I can go and get work?" And they all say, "Yeah, you can think about working for a caravan, or you can go work for the Fargo Traders." Wink, 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 wink. Have you thought about the Fargo Traders? Wink, 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 wink. And so, yeah, I think they're on this screen. If not this screen, then it's the one south of here, but it's somewhere pretty close.
Yeah. So, obviously, the Fargo Traders are important because they have the same name as Brian Fargo.
And the Famine in Fargo, which is a Gamma World module, which Wasteland, which Fallout's kind of based on, and then Fallout are both in conversation with.
Wait, really?
So, yeah.
Like, just by chance, his name is also Brian Fargo?
Yeah, I think this is like a fun both and scenario where in this like apocalypse tradition, like Gamma World was certainly influential on both this and Wasteland, like where Gamma World having Fargo as a thing, mm-hmm. and then Brian Fargo being his name combined together.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. So the Fargo Traders are obviously the people they really want you to talk to. And you can go there and you meet Rutger and Butch, which are some great names.
Uh-huh. I forget which one. Is Butch the talking head or is Rutger the talking head?
This is weird because Butch is the talking head, but Rutger is actually the one who has the most to say.
Yes. And you keep being referred back to him to like do things, which is really weird.
Yeah. No, I don't. I wonder if there was like some sort of like technical thing that was going on, because the quests that you're running through the Fargo Traders ostensibly should be going to Butch because he's the talking head, he's the important person, but basically all Butch ever says to you is like, whatever, and like, go talk to Rutger.
Oh, well, Butch says at one point, "I gotta take this back to the council."
Oh, I guess that's true. Yes.
But yes, no, you're right. Like, no, like, content and plot development happens through the talking head here, which is really weird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they, obviously, the thing that they're most concerned about is all of these caravans disappearing. No one knows why. No one knows what's going on. Some people think it's raiders, but some people, there are rumors, Cameron, there's whispers of a thing called a Death Claw. And this is
the Death Claw.
Death Claw.
Like, you can make our voices echo whenever we say Deathclaw.
Deathclaw.
So this is an interesting aspect of this game. This is not... I don't know about you. This is not the first time I've heard about the Deathclaw in this game. I cannot remember the first mention of Deathclaw, though. It was in, I think, possibly Shady Sands, maybe Junktown, maybe even in the Raider Camp. It just someone mentioned a Deathclaw, and I was like, well, what's a Deathclaw? And they were like, oh, it's this horrible thing, this like ghost in the night, you don't even know what's gonna happen, like you're dead before you know what happened, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Which is one, a pretty good way of building up to this point where I am in the game now, where like, okay, like this Deathclaw thing has come back, and two, really funny with kind of the foresight we have as people who have played the later games in this series, where I feel like Deathclaws are just mobs that are thrown at you.
Yeah, by the time you get to Fallout 4 and it's like, and you get a Death Claw, and you get a Death Claw. Look under your seats, you all get a Death Claw. Like, yeah, it's not very special anymore, which is kind of a bummer. Because they are, it very much, yeah, has a almost like a slasher film kind of vibe to it of like, have you heard? have you heard somewhere out there with the whisper of the moon? It's the Deathclaw. He's coming to get you. He's coming for you, Barbara.
Right. Well, like and, some people don't even believe the Deathclaws exist, right?
Yes. Yeah. That's so good about it too. Is that like you talk to Butch about it? And he's like, I'm pretty sure there's a Deathclaw. And then you talk to other people, and he's like, pull the other one. Why don't you the Deathclaw? Ha ha ha. But you know what? They're real.
They are real.
And I've seen them. I've seen dry land.
Yeah, so they tell you to go talk to Beth, I think, right?
So Beth is the weapon shop owner, and they say, if you work for us, you get, a 10% or a 15% discount on...
15%, I think.
Yeah, and so you can go talk to Beth, and you can get more information about... just the caravans in general. I don't quite know why we're going to this other character other than to make sure that we know that there's a weapon shop. But yeah, they're like, well, if we knew what was up, and that's why actually what I think is pretty funny about the dialogue with both of these characters is that anytime you ask for more information, they're like, look, if we knew that, we would have solved the problem of the disappearing caravans already. Like, if we could tell you anything more, we would not have you doing the thing. You need to go figure it out, which is a very... like tabletop DM kind of response of like, well, look, I'm not telling you this because I don't, you know, we don't, the character wouldn't know that. It feels very anti-video gamey to like kind of say, this is why I don't know this thing. But I appreciate it a lot. And I like talking to Beth. She's an interesting and cool little five line character.
Yeah. She's a, how would you describe Beth?
She's like, she's a gossip.
Yeah, a gossip and a conspiracy theorist.
Aren't those the same thing always?
Well, I guess, yeah. Just to a certain extent. What is a conspiracy theorist but a gossip on a global scale?
Wow. Profound. Professor Zizek.
My glove. so yes, Beth will tell you about the Deathclaw. Beth definitely believes in the Deathclaw.
Oh hell yeah, Beth absolutely knows about the Deathclaw for sure.
And she, what did she tell us? I don't remember.
She says, yeah, there's basically like, you know, the caravans are going out. She gives us a lot of like additional world building stuff that you were talking about too. She says, yes, the Fargo traders get hit pretty hard by this creature. Or you know, by whatever. They're being attacked more often than other caravans, but that's also because the other caravans have more protection, because there's the Red River Traders or something that. Right. Mm-hmm. And so she says, well, they don't get attacked very often, but that's because they are overarmed and they're more dangerous anyway, and so they get killed all the time for different reasons, you know. So they could be being preyed upon, but we wouldn't really know because they have such a low success rate anyway. And she says there's also the Water Traders, which is an organization that like takes water to municipalities. And she says, well, they're hyper armed and they only have water. Like, people know they only have water, and so maybe they're not being preyed on for certain reasons for that. And then she says there's also other groups that are being attacked in the wasteland. And, you know, people are being attacked by raiders and things like that all the time. So she basically gives you this, like, picture of what's happening outside of the hub, and then like why you might think that there's something weird going on with Fargo Traders, but why there also might not be anything happening. But if you believe in the Deathclaw like Beth does, then you can go and talk to two people, Harold and Uncle Slappy,
I guess.
Old Slappy, something like that. Yeah, Slappy.
I think it's Uncle Slappy.
Who claim to have seen the Deathclaw before.
Mm-hmm.
And, so you can go talk to them and they're on another screen.
Yeah. I think it's really interesting that with that world building also, we get the entire like ratiocination of, like this almost procedural way of thinking like, well, here is what their motives could be. And here are all the variables that could be impacting what's going on with what the Fargo traders think is happening. It's so strange.
It's very tabletop again, right? It's mm-hmm. very much like, oh, I could see, you know, me myself writing this as a scenario that I would have players play through. But also my players would have like 400,000 different options of what to do from here on out. And it would probably take, you know, several weeks of thinking about this problem to really get there. And right. There's just not that many. There's in fact only one solution to this problem. That's going and talking to Harold and then going and talking to Slappy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we go and talk to those guys. And I think Harold is unique, I'm pretty sure, because he is the first ghoul we've seen in the game.
Yeah, and do they even call him a ghoul?
No, because I guess he's technically not, for reasons we're going to get into.
yeah, he just looks like a ghoul, talks like a ghoul, is not a ghoul.
Right. In fact, Harold is a pre-war person, as you learn when you talk to him.
He's my favorite NPC in all of... again, the police are coming to get me for saying this heresy, but he is my favorite character in all of Fallout. He shows up in this game and some other Fallout games. And he went down into the vault.
And then was ejected
from the vault as an adult. Mm-hmm. They had to go get some supplies. Very similar kind of vibe to what's happening with with Vault 13.
Mm-hmm.
To do it. But yeah.
Yeah, so, and also I would say, like, the voice acting. Harold is a talking head. Mm-hmm. You get to see his, like, you know, gross mutant face or what have you. But he's very friendly and kind of wheezy, and he has all sorts of weird stories to tell. And he tells you, like, this entire life story of, like, being a child before the war, going into the vaults, and then eventually leaving. And you can just, like, pump him for information all day, just hearing about, like, the stuff that he has done. And eventually what you learn is that at some point after leaving the vault, he met a guy named Richard Gray.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think they were in the vault together. I think they left the vault together.
Were they in the vault together? Okay. So maybe
I believe so. Okay. Yeah.
Anyway, Richard Gray is a guy who existed at one point, and that's important, mm-hmm. or will be important, I think. I don't know. I haven't finished the game, but just a hunch. And the last time... So, let me rethink this.
Mm-hmm.
So, one of the things that Harold ends up divulging is that he was doing travel... Like, after he got out of the vault, you ask him, basically, like, why are you the way you are? What happened to you? And... He talks about how he died, right? Like that's a punchline he has.
He goes ha 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 ha. And just to give people, if you're only listening to the audio, right? He's green. His skin is wrinkling off of his body. He looks like a zombie. He looks like a ghoul. But Harold's got some stuff going on.
Right. So you're like, you know, what happened to you? And he's like, I died. Ha 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 ha. Love it.
Yeah.
So I guess he did technically actually die, but how he died was he was on kind of this expedition with this Richard Gray fellow who he has a lot of respect for, it seems, and also maybe no little amount of fear. This Richard Gray person was, I guess, he was a doctor, he was very smart, but kind of mysterious, and they were... part of a team that was going through an old military base off to the west of, like, the world map where we are, and it was a fiasco, and basically everyone ended up dying, I think, except for Harold himself and Richard Gray. And there was some sort of equipment malfunction, and Richard Gray got, you know, possibly, like, smashed by some piece of machinery or, like, knocked out of the way. Harold basically assumes that he's dead, but Harold was exposed to something, some sort of chemical, mm-hmm. and when he woke up, he was the way he is now.
Yeah, he gets knocked out, and then he wakes up in the wasteland, right? So, like, has taken him out of the military base and all that kind of stuff, yeah. And then he says, you know, he returns to the hub, and he's never left the hub after that part. But he's been here for like 100-something years, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, if he went into the vaults as a child, he's definitely over 100 years old. And if he was out,
I'm looking at the Fallout timeline right now.
Yeah, if he was out and adventuring when he was an adult, then you know he's been in the hub at least close to 100 years, the better part of a century at least.
See, Harold. 2090 is when Vault 29 opens. And then gosh, there's a lot of information about Harold.
That's what
Harold already mutating.
Games.
Yeah. Okay, so it says 2162 is when Fallout 1 takes place, I think.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And the
so,
war is 2077, I think.
Well, war never changes, Michael.
Oh, okay. All right. The war is all
yes.
years.
Yeah. So, yeah, exactly. Well, it's the war of all against all, of course. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's the case. Yeah, 2077.
Yeah. All right.
But, so yeah, so he's old as hell. Mm-hmm. All of that timeline work to say he's old as hell. And so, you can ask him about the Deathclaw or something to that effect, right? I forget exactly how you get to that point.
Yeah. I mean, it's just one of the many things you can ask him about. I think because of Beth, it's like one of your dialogue options. It's like, hey, you heard of the Deathclaw? I've heard of the Deathclaw.
I wish that was the entirety of the game. Oh, well, I've heard you've heard of someone here. So you can go and talk to Uncle Slappy about it. And you can say, hey, Uncle Slappy. This is the silliest part of this whole thing to me. You can say, hey, Uncle Slappy, I've heard you know where the Deathclaw is. And he's like, hell yeah, I know where the Deathclaw is. You want me to take you there? And I was like, sure, I guess. I mean, that sounds cool. And then, boom, much like the Rad Scorpion Cave, I'm teleported to the Deathclaw's lair. And lo and behold, yeah. I'm zipping around and looking at this screen, and there's a Deathclaw.
Yeah. It's very strange. I don't know exactly why this is split between these two NPCs. I don't know why Harold didn't just take us to the Deathclaw's lair. Other than, like, because, like, what he says is, like, oh, yeah, no, I've heard about the Deathclaw, but if you want to, like, know any more, you should go see Slappy.
Mm-hmm.
And then Slappy's, like, just this weird, like, quote-unquote, like, crazy person living in the street. And he says a bunch of nonsense, and then he takes you to a cave.
Yeah, he's a teleporter NPC.
Yeah.
There's of course, serfs and peasants and dirt farmers and teleporters. Those are the and sheriffs. Those are all the social classes of the Fallout world. But yeah, so you take us there, and it's just a big old cave, and there's one thing here, and it's a big old Deathclaw, and you got to fight it.
Mm-hmm. How'd that go?
Well, it went great for me. It went excellent for me. I rolled in there. I'm not being sarcastic, Michael. Went great.
Okay.
Huh. I hit it with my hammer. No, I actually did not. So what I did is I have Tycho, right? Is that his name?
Yes.
I've got Tycho. I've got Ian. I gave Ian a better gun than the SMG, so he can't splatter me. And I've got dog meat. And I ran up real fast, aggroed the Deathclaw, and just every turn ran away from the Deathclaw. And everyone else just shot it. Constantly. And it took me a couple times of trying to do that. It actually took me one death to figure out that I could be doing that. And once I did, it was great. I was even able to smash it in the eyeballs one time, because that's actually what someone tells you to do. I think Harold says, yeah, have you thought about smashing the thing in the eyeballs?
Yeah.
And I did that and squashed them and did like 42 points of damage with my hammer to the eyeball. And yeah, it was pretty good. It was pretty easy. As I thought it was going to be really, really difficult, but my party composition of two gunmen and a tenacious dog made this very easy in a way that something I did later was not easy.
Well, this is probably my most high drama moment because, the first thing I did is get immediately killed by the Deathclaw, like you, and then I sort of like had to save scum a bunch while I figured out what a workable strategy was. And it turned out my workable strategy was running up, aggroing the Deathclaw, and then running away from it, but pausing every so often to throw frag grenades at it, or and that ended up being helpful as it was chasing me. But meanwhile, I have only Ian and Dogmeat. Dogmeat was doing his darndest, I guess. But for whatever reason, I guess, the Deathclaw was not terribly interested in him. I resorted to my old tactic of really trying to keep Ian between me and whatever I was trying to kill. And sorry to say that even though we have vanquished the Deathclaw, Ian did not make it.
Oh, no!
So it's just me and my dog now.
Well, that's the way God intended, yeah. Michael.
I mean, who's to say? Did the Deathclaw kill Ian? Was it maybe one of the frag grenades that went off right next to him as he was fighting the Deathclaw? The Wasteland is a complicated place.
It's the land of contrasts, mm-hmm. you know, being peppered with fragmentation grenade shrapnel and not being peppered with fragmentation, you know, who can say what the best life is? Mm-hmm. Not me.
So, yeah, with the Deathclaw dead, then you find out it's like, it's just like chilling in this cave next to a large corpse. Or actually, it's not a corpse yet. It's still alive. It's a thing, a person, and you talk to it, and it talks about how it's dying or whatever. It's a super mutant. It's the first super mutant we've seen, and I don't think we know to call them super mutants yet, but if you're familiar with Fallout, you know what super mutants are, and you can find another holo disk on its corpse.
Can I just, just want to pause here for one moment to note that this is probably a $1 billion franchise at this point, right?
Mm-hmm.
You think it's made a B? Like, total in all the Fallout games?
Yeah, that's probably, that makes sense.
But if not, hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars of profit.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the, you know, most important things in this series that unifies it, that makes it special, that makes it really cool, are super mutants. The least creatively named thing in human history. You might as well just call them big guys. You know, the big guys.
I mean, it's what they are.
Yeah, they're big guys. They're here, and this is the, you know, I was able to use this holodesk. You can read it in your Pip-Boy. And I think it's really cool. Like, I think this is some cool stuff. You find out, basically, that it was not the Deathclaw that is killing these caravans, or maybe sometimes it is the Deathclaw, but really, it is because you're reading like a journal. This is kind of like early read a journal to get the information in a game kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
A pre-audio log, if you will.
Yeah, essentially, and, right? That it's presented as like this particular super mutant's like transmissions back to base.
Yeah, 100%. And so basically, it says, yeah, we have been abducting. We're, you know, the super mutants are running around out here abducting people. They're not after the goods, although I think they do use the goods or whatever. But they're not after the goods from these trading caravans. They're after the people mm-hmm. in order to harvest. I think they use the word harvest, but mm-hmm. they are harvesting them. We don't know for what. We have no idea. But they're abducting people. And then I think that we know that they're taking them back to the military base, right?
Yes, and not only, and like, also what we know is that this is not, there is a structure here, there is a command structure. This is not just sort of like, we're randomly kidnapping people because we love to and we're mutants. Like, there is a purpose, they are serving someone. This is, systemic is maybe too broad a word, but like, this is programmatic, right? Mm-hmm. Something is happening, someone is up to something.
Yeah. And this is, we're not jumping the gun on saying this. This is the plot of the game.
Right.
We're like four and a half, five hours in this game. And this is the actual thing that is going to take us toward the end of the game, although we can't really pursue it very far right now.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this kind of question about what the hell is going on with these mutants, that's going to motivate our character through the rest of the game. But right now we get to go back and say, well, you know what? There was a Deathclaw. And I killed it, but it was not actually the problem that you were looking for. This is not the murderer you're looking for. the murderer you're looking for is in a different military base. And people tend to not believe that, weirdly enough.
Yeah, no, they're just kind of like, what?
Yeah, are you sure? And, yeah, I'm like 85% sure.
And that's...
And so, yeah. Oh, no, go ahead.
I was going to say, like, and that's kind of that for now. Like, mm-hmm. This is another thing that's very interesting about the game where, when we think of modern game design, we think of, or at least I think of, quests that, like, very explicitly link up together, like, from here to here to here to here. And what this has done is, as you said, like, just sort of introduced you to the fact that there's another plot to this game, right? You thought this was a game about getting your water chip. Actually, there's something else going on. And it doesn't direct you immediately to do anything about it. It's just like, hey, by the way, this is a thing that's happening.
Yeah, if this were like a contemporary Fallout game, this would be, super mutants would be in the opening crawl. It would be like, and as we know, the super mutant threat is blah, 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 blah. There would not be, like, any room for this weird, like, meta plot to show up, or, you know, guiding central plot to show up in the middle of the game. But that's where we are. So I have two additional things that I did, or two additional things to say, and then, Michael, you can carry us through to the end of the episode, because you did quite a bit more here than I did.
Oh, okay.
And I'll say this is why. Number one, the thing that I did is that deputy told me to stay away from the Maltese Falcon, so I did.
That's role-playing, baby.
It is. I was like, Tonk would follow directions on this one. Like, everyone is like, hey, don't go there. It's bad for you. It's a bad thing to do. So Tonk didn't go in here. My intention was to try to volunteer for the other caravan thing, to like go do a caravan route with them, and I just forgot to do that before we recorded. But I think I'm going to do that before the next episode. So there's that. So I know you have things to talk about in the Maltese Falcon, but Tonk just didn't do any of that. The other thing, and I've not seen this in your notes, is did you do the quest for, I think his name is Lewis, with his farmhouse?
Oh, wait, yes. No. His name is Irwin, I think, isn't it?
Irwin, yeah. Yes, Irwin.
I did do that, but it was, like, I forgot it because it feels a little flavorless.
The vast majority of the recording that people are going to be watching on YouTube is just me trying over and over again to clear out this farmhouse and dying. this is the most challenging battle I've done in this game. It took me a full 45 minutes to do this. It was very, very difficult. And sometimes I was winning, but Dogmeat was dying, and of course I had to reload. That is unacceptable. Dogmeat can only die in my game if it is dramatic and appropriate. So perhaps in the final boss battle it would be acceptable. But so I did that, and that took a lot of my time. But I did not do any of this other stuff that you're talking about. Oh, other than the water merchants, I did go talk to the water merchants, and they told me about two things. They told me about the necropolis, that it exists, which is just like a place in L.A., I believe, is where the necropolis is.
It is actually Bakersfield.
Oh, okay. Okay. Oh, yeah. We just talked about that at the beginning of the episode. So it's in Bakersfield. And then then they told me that they could deliver water to the vault, Vault 13, if I gave them a location. If I gave them, I think, 2,000 caps.
Yeah.
And I don't have any caps. So I didn't do that.
Yeah. And that was it? That was the end of the hub?
Yeah, I was like, all right, seems like a not. Well, because there was nothing else to do other than the Maltese Falcon. And I was like, I'm not. You seem. I was told not to go there.
Okay.
It's like if Luke, during, you know, A New Hope, Obi-Wan was like, it's a hive of scum and villainy. He's like, you're right.
And then you see, like, the little speeder taking off in the opposite direction of Mos Eisley.
Yeah, he's killed by stormtroopers in on Tatooine in the desert somewhere, and then Han Solo goes off and does his own thing.
Yeah. All right, well, then it's up to me to talk about a lot of the other stuff that I did, because there is a lot that can happen here. To just cover, like, my experience with the water merchants, I showed up, I got, like, the same tip and the same offer to bring water, not offer, I guess. You can ask them if they will bring water to the vault. It was way too much money. But they did mention that the necropolis exists, and it might be a place where I could find a functioning water chip. Because there is, or I might be able to find water there either way, because one, I believe there is a waterworks there, and two, there was a vault there, at least at one point, so there might be another water chip. So just filing that away for later.
Yeah.
The other things that happened, I discovered a place called FLC, the Friendly Lending Company, and there's a guy here named Lorenzo, and he's a moneylender. And he's kind of a real, you know, piece of poop about it, because he laughs with you about, like, how much he's charging in interest and all this money he's making and blah, 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 blah. What?
Tonk would never be involved in this because he doesn't believe in usury.
Yes. So what I did, I was like, well, that sucks for you, buddy. I'm going to go pick the lock on your vault and steal all your money.
Eleanor.
It's you know, it's like Robin Hood. I'm stealing from the rich and giving to myself, because you can't actually give this money to anyone else. But he noticed that I was picking the lock on his vault, and he got mad at me and tried to kill me, so I killed him. And then he had two guards, and I had to kill them too. However, and I guess this goes to show you, like, what people thought of Lorenzo, no one in town cared.
Oh, like, so you came out of that, and you were like, all right, I'm ready to kill the next 40 people in this town.
Yeah, I got into one of those places where I don't know if I could have picked the lock without him noticing, but at that time, I had successfully picked the lock. I had gotten, like, 3,000 caps or something, and I had I had successfully fought him off. And then I had fought off his guards, and then I was like, oh, let's just see how long Eleanor lives before the cops kill her. No one cares. Bye, Lorenzo. The end.
It's extremely powerful energy.
Yeah. There's also, I don't know what this guy's name is, but there's a guy near the Friendly Lending Company who is, like, saying a bunch of nonsense, not in a slappy type way, but in kind of like you know, I have secret information, kind of
Oh, yeah,
way.
I talked to this guy, too.
Yeah. He also, like, wants you to pay him, like, 1,000 caps to get his secret information. He, like, can introduce you to someone or something. I had just got all this money. I worked really hard for this. I'm not going to give it to you. And so he refused to talk to me. Like, that was it.
I think I just immediately threatened him. I know that I worked my way to a threat, and he was like, all right, cool, whatever, I'll see you later. Please stop talking to me. So yeah, that's good.
Yeah, so I don't know, like, there was probably maybe some other quest there, I'm not sure, but he just stopped talking to me. And then I wandered toward the Maltese Falcon, and I went inside, because I'm Eleanor, I'm a moral agent, I am unconstrained by rules, I know that ethics is bound up within choice, and even though I had been told not to go to the Maltese Falcon, that's where I went. There's a bunch of gambling here. It's kind of a big city gizmo kind of place. There's gambling, there are rooms that are very strongly suggested to be, like, sex worker sort of places, like it's a brothel kind of, I guess, brothel slash casino. And there's a guy hanging out in front of the, like, a side door. Well, there's a bartender, and you can talk to the bartender, and if you ask around about Deckard, who's this guy who's running the Maltese Falcon, who the cops don't think highly of, if you want to talk about Deckard, they recommend you talk to Kane, who is his second in command. Deckard Kane. Who knows if that's intentional? And if it is, why is it intentional? I don't know, but Diablo references.
That's bizarre.
Yeah.
And weird.
So you talk to Kane, and he, you know, you can convince him to that you're kind of like on his side or whatever, and he'll take you down into the basement with Deckard, and Deckard tells you that he wants you to kill some rich merchant whose name I don't remember. But he's basically... Oh, it's Hightower, I think. Is that right? Oh, wait, you didn't do this. You don't know.
I didn't do it.
Yeah, you didn't do it. Yeah, no, Hightower. His name is Darren Hightower. I guess he is the head of the water merchants, so he is filthy rich. But he doesn't actually do any of the work with the water merchants. The woman I had to talk to at the water merchants was named Martha, and she seemed very exasperated, because it
sounds like you're describing a boss, Michael.
A boss, yes. Because what Darren Hightower does is sit in his relatively fancy apartment, surrounded by guards who will all try to kill you if you walk into his apartment without talking to them first. So at this point, I did a couple of experiments because they had given me... So basically, you know, Deckard was like, oh, I want to kill Darren Hightower. That way I can, you know, get all of his money and become more powerful. Normal wasteland politics. You know how it is.
Yeah, I do.
So I was like, okay, this is interesting. Clearly what I can do is go report this as a crime. Or at least I hope at this point. But it turns out that...
This sounds cannibalism, not a crime, perhaps.
Yes, cannibalism, not a crime. This... Maybe. Contract killings, maybe a crime.
Sounds like a crime.
Yeah. But before I did that, I wanted to go see Hightower himself and see what happened. So I went to the south of the map where I talked to the guard outside of his house, who doesn't want to let you in, and I got in very easily by just saying, like, I have an appointment. Like, that is, he's like, you know, Mr. Hightower only takes people when he has appointments. And then I was just like, oh, I have an appointment, and I'm running late. And he was like, oh, you better get inside then.
Yeah, knowing what an appointment is an incredibly beneficial thing. Tonk would have been like, I don't know what you're talking about. What is an, I don't, is it sharp? Is it, does it have a rounded end or a pointy end?
Yes. No, so then after that, there's another guard inside that who will stop you and be like, you know, no one gets, like, he's kind of like more of a bodyguard. Like, no one talks to Mr. Hightower. Like, you gotta get through me or whatever. And I said something about how it's a matter of life and death, I think. It's like, you have to let me see Mr. Hightower. It's a matter of life and death. And he's like, what? And I was like, Deckard has put out a price on his life, right? He's you know, he's hiring killers. And the guard, who has a name, but who cares, he's like, oh, yeah? Like, that's not the first... It wouldn't be the first time. Like, here are all of the... Like, I have a mark on my gun for every time I've killed someone who Deckard sent after Mr. Hightower. And then my responses at this juncture were to say that I had been hired to kill Hightower. Uh-huh. Just admit that, at which point the guard would try to kill me. So I reloaded. And then I could also, and I chose the next option, which was this really sarcastic, ooh, you have scratches on your gun. You're really cool. And then he just gets angry at you and makes you go back outside. So that's that.
You violate my principles of action.
Right, like, Hightower himself is actually, like, in a little corner room of this area. And I tried bypassing his guard and just going straight to Hightower to talk to him. And you go into his room, his little office, and he is like, who are you? What are you doing here? And I'm like, I'm here to tell you that someone is like, you know, Deckard is trying to kill you. And he's like, I know, guards. And so then everyone
actual
agnes,
facts, bro.
Right.
Oh, that's
so
funny.
So that's as much as you could do there. So I ended up going to the police station, and I told the sheriff I reported a crime. I could actually report this crime, and I was like, hey, Deckard has here's my crime. Deckard has hired me to kill Mr. Hightower. And the cops are like, you know, hot dang, that's exactly what we were waiting for. Like, let's go clean up this act, right? Like, this is, like, they've been waiting to do a sting operation on Deckard. And I took that moment, like, you know, made sure I had, oh, I should say, a thing that Eleanor has learned, shotguns mm-hmm. are her best friend now that Ian is gone. So I have, like, I got a shotgun and a whole bunch of ammo, and then we teleported into the basement of the Maltese Falcon, and how does this work out? Okay, so Deckard says something about, like, you know, or, like, the cops are here to arrest him, and Deckard, you know, says, like, you know, see you later, coppers, and he goes off, he, like, runs away immediately. And so I went after him, I shot him to death, and then his Kane is also there, who is, again, the guy, his, like, second in command. Kane is really hard to kill. Kane killed me. Kane, like, punched me to death, because he has, I think, like, not brass knuckles, but, like, barbed wire knuckles or something.
Oh, yeah, those, like, real spiky ones you can get?
Yeah, and he just, like, walked up and just, like, punched me to death.
Dang.
So, I reloaded, and this time I killed Deckard and was more judicious in how I dealt with... And also, I have the cops there with me, so this helped. And once Kane died, there were a whole bunch of other... NPCs down here, like other guards that Deckard had hired, I guess. Once Deckard and Kane are dead, all of the other guards surrender. So that battle ended very nicely. And I guess I don't know who runs the Maltese Falcon now. It's still there, but it's not Deckard.
Well, you know, who runs Bartertown?
I Mr. Hightower now, I suppose. And he's kind of a jerk, and there's nothing else I can do with him. Like, I went back to see if maybe he would be more positive toward me now that I have, like, officially saved his life. No. So I don't know. I got some experience from that, and I think maybe the cops gave me some bottle caps, but also I'm rich because I killed Lorenzo. So who's to say?
Tonk needs to kill Lorenzo and get that water going up to Vault 13.
That might be useful. However, well, it depends on what we're going to do next, I guess. I'm gonna remain a little mum because that caravan, I think, at least in my game, because I've played a little bit ahead of where we're talking, that caravan became almost immediately obsolete.
Okay. Well, so I think in the next episode, I think we're going to do two things in the next episode. We're going to go to the Necropolis. And we're also going to do Brotherhood of Steel, I think, at the same time.
Okay.
Because Necropolis is a little bit thin, right?
It is a little bit... Well, it was thin for me. There were clearly some quests there that I didn't get because... Partly I didn't know how to get them, but yeah, it's fairly clear, very quick, and yeah, then there's some other stuff after that, but it's too exciting to talk about on this episode. We need to save it and build suspense.
Yeah, so we know we got to go to the Brotherhood of Steel. Multiple people have told us about it, so we're going to do Brotherhood of Steel and Necropolis in the next episode. Michael, do you have anything you need to plug?
Yeah, I mean, by this point, it's probably been out for a couple weeks by the time you're listening to this, but as of today, my... essay on non-humans and history and Macbeth dropped in the latest issue of Modern Philology, which is an academic journal that you have to have institutional affiliation with in order to read. But if you want, like, reach out to me and I can, you know, see you get a PDF of this really cool essay I have that has nothing at all to do with Fallout, but everything to do with trees and old plays and witches.
Yeah, just send him a Discord message. He's on the Discord. You can send him a Discord message. Say, hey, give me that delicious, beautiful bean footage. And we'll go from there. I don't have anything to plug. You can go to twitter.com/cconsulman to see what I'm doing. And for all things Range Touch and all things Too Much Future, you can go to twitter.com/RangeTouch. You can go to youtube.com/RangeTouch. And you can go to patreon.com/RangeTouch in order to do all the things that you do on those websites. Importantly, if you want to have access to... This is going to be new for when this episode is out. Or this will be in the works by the time this episode is out. If you would like to have a RSS feed for a podcast version of the show, let me know. Well, I mean, you don't have to let me know, actually. You can just support on Patreon for $3 a month. That's going to be behind the paywall. Of course, the YouTube one will always be free. Feel free to listen to it on YouTube. Feel free to rip the audio out of this and upload it yourself. Do all that. But if you want a nice, easy RSS feed, putting that bad boy behind the paywall to encourage some people to support the show. It's less than the cost of a cup of coffee a month. So think about doing that. It really helps us out. Helps us out with the hosting fees, all those different things. And you get access to our newsletter and all that kind of fun stuff. So, yeah. Next time we're going to the Necropolis and we're going to the Brotherhood of Steel, the good old-fashioned Brotherhood of Steel that we're going to have to hear about for the next billion years in every other Fallout game. So I hope you're ready to
see. The Brotherhood of Steel that is like... becomes more important than nuclear weapons and super mutants to a certain extent, and has been talked about maybe three times in different ways, but very vaguely about all these NPCs.
Yeah, we're going to see this kind of paleo Brotherhood of Steel, and we're going to get to compare it to all the other Brotherhood of Steel stuff that we get in the rest of the things. You know, this is a good question, Michael. Are we going to play the third-person action game?
I don't know. Can you get that anywhere? Is it still... know. Can you purchase it?
I haven't thought about it. I don't know. Leave us a comment. Let us know what you think. We're still in discussions about it. Anyway, you will listen to the next episode of this in 2 weeks. Thanks so much for listening. Goodbye.
War never changes, but Fallout sure does.
Is it feeling better yet?
Yep. Everything.